It's going good. How are you?
Welcome to the 9 to 5 Mac Happy Hour podcast. This week we're going to talk about all of the rumors from today.
Yes.
What happened today? Man, wasn't that a good call yesterday I made when I said, let's wait one day to record?
Yeah, like you clearly knew what was about to unfold.
Yeah, me and Quo, we got him on speed dial.
Yeah, there were some decent stories from like the start of the week, but this is like the good stuff basically all happened like this morning.
Yeah, I mean, the really good stuff is in your pre-topics list that I'm looking at, which the first thing is that I have a PS5. I love that you included that.
You go on.
Yeah, I have a PS5. Did we ever talk about on the show that I was trying to get one?
I think you might mention it like one sentence offhandly. But.
Yeah, I was doing all the things you do when you like follow different Twitter accounts that tweet out when there's an inventory restock. And then I had like page tracker set up myself to know when web pages would show, you know, a new inventory ready for pickup. You know, all the 9 to 5 Mac tricks. And it worked. There was a Best Buy near me in Kissimmee, which had inventory last Wednesday. And the process is like you say add to cart if they have inventory. And then it puts you in another queue. It puts you in a queue that then says, okay, will this button turn yellow or will it stay gray and reject you? And if it turns yellow, then you actually add it to your cart. And I did that and it worked out. And then it was like 1 hour pickup. So it should have been after like lunchtime last Wednesday that it was ready. And then days went by and I was like, well, I guess that didn't work out. And I can kind of give up on it. And 6 days later, last Tuesday, it said it was ready for pickup. And I was like, well, we'll see when we get there. But it really was there.
One thing that always surprised me about, like, because the reason they have those, like, intermediary steps is to stop, like, scalpers and stuff. Because, you know, so many people just try and use bots these days to buy all, like, the hot products and then they resell them instantly. So similar to, like, a CAPTCHA where you get, like, you know, click on the clouds, click on the cars or whatever in these pictures. Yeah. They do this thing where it's like, well, you press the like the buy button or you show interest, but then you have to like wait another like 4 minutes or however long it takes to actually press the button to confirm the order. But then you look at the Apple store and they have none of that. Like on the Apple store, you just check out with a button. So I don't know whether Apple's missing a trick and they could reduce scalping on the iPhone by adding these like intermediary steps where they've decided that whether they're just smarter about detecting that stuff and they don't need it, or maybe they've decided that it's not worth the cost to the user experience to put those into, you know, to put those screens in the way of the purchase button and we'll just, you know, accept the scalping.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the 6 days of processing was about, but no, it's funny when I went to go. I only have my motorcycle in Orlando right now. My car is in Mississippi, and so I flew back. And I was looking. I was like, what are the dimensions of that box for the PS5? And they were huge. And I looked at the dimensions of my backpack, and I was like, there's no way I can take this on the motorcycle. So I did like this Tesla rental thing, which part of my apartment has, and so. I got rented a Model 3 to go pick up a PS5. It's the most 2021 thing in the world. But that's fine.
So what'd you get a PS5 for?
To play.
Yeah, but anything in particular?
Right. I put the Apple TV app on it.
That was what made you pull the trigger. It's like the TV app's available. Now I need it.
Yeah, well, and it does mean I can't use the HomePods for that sound output now because I was using just Apple TV. So now I'm like, I guess I kind of want like a 5.1 system, I guess. My last console was a PS2, so it's been a long time. Apple Arcade never hit it for me. I feel like having a modern console is kind of neat. And I wanted to get Gran Turismo, but it isn't out yet. So I got the Spider-Man Miles Morales game. So and I've been swinging around, and it's fun.
I will say my brother has the Xbox. What do they call it? Series X, the new one. Yeah. That Series X, I think. And that has the TV app as well, obviously. And the performance on the Xbox is really good. Like it flies around the screen like very efficiently, and the animation is
better than
smooth.
The Apple TV 4K.
Yeah, like the Apple TV 4K is starting to show its age, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's 8K on the PS5.
But yeah, hopefully we can get a similar experience to that on like Apple's hardware soon, whenever they do decide to refresh that box.
And also, I'll say I was having Wi-Fi issues when I was setting it up, and you know, you go through the whole update process. And I used 5G to update my PS5.
The 5G.
No kidding. let's talk about some Apple TV stuff, too, before we get into the big news of the week. So you just covered a story on Undefed Mac about Apple TV Plus and the free trials from many, many moons ago. What's new there?
Yeah, so way back in November of 2019, Apple started offering one-year free trials for Apple TV Plus with new hardware purchases. Back in October of 2020, they announced that they were going to extend those trials through to the end of January, saying at the time that because of the pandemic, they want to give people stuff to watch over Christmas. Secondary reason, which is really, you know, the main reason, is that they obviously aren't in a position yet to like charge people openly for this service because the content, you know, is taking a while to get out there, and it just takes a while in general. Like, even without the pandemic, it just takes time for them to actually produce the shows because they're so insistent on not offering, you know, back catalog reruns. All the original stuff just takes time to make. So, like, even before the pandemic, you know, we were saying the show it's going to take a year, extra 2 years or whatever for the service to become meaningful at all, right? And so they announced that in October, and they were like, okay, now we'll start charging everyone at the beginning of February. Well, it's now the middle of January, and so crunch time was coming up because the first paid subscriptions would start for those trial members beginning February 1st. And lo and behold, they've announced again today that they're going to extend it again. So instead of extending from February, now it goes through to the end of July. So basically, if you have a trial, if you have any type of Apple TV Plus subscription at the moment that ends between February and June, it will now end from July. So you get an extra extra month's free if you're on a free tier. If you pay currently, you'll get credit back. If you're on an Apple One subscription, you'll get credit back as well, basically to compensate for you for not... they're basically giving these months away to anybody, right, that already is a paying customer, so they just offset the money if you're not on the free trials. I do think it's a bit, like, amateurish of them to have to, like, come out and only 3 months later extend it again. Like, why in October were they not just more, like, bullish on the thing and just say, okay, we're just going to extend to July from October? Like,
did they think they'd have more ready by then?
I don't know. Like, what they announced, because they kind of previewed their early January stuff in that like October timeframe, right? And that's come out, and it's still set to come out on time. Like, I don't know what they thought in October was going to be so different. Like, it does make them seem like they're, you know, more desperate than I think they really are. Like, I think internally they know that building up an original TV service just takes a long time, and they're going to burn money for a while they make that stuff happen. And, you know, if you give them a few more months, maybe to the end of the year, they'll probably be at a pace of about, you know, one new thing a week, which is a lot better than going, you know, 4 weeks without anything new, and then you get something new, and then there's another like 2 week gap and stuff. So, like, I think they understand that, but it is just kind of strange where they're like, yeah, in October, we'll give you an extra 3 months. And now it's like, oh no, just kidding. We'll give you an extra 6 months. And now if you took advantage of the free trial on November 1st, which in a minute will last for 1 year, you're now getting an extra 9 months in total of free usage. And who knows, maybe in July they'll announce it again and just extend it through the end of the year. Like, I don't really understand that part of it. Like, it feels like there may be some miscommunication there, or some parts of Apple want to give people longer trials, and maybe other parts of Apple are like, no, we can't do that. You know, we want to maintain the premium nature of the brand. And then it comes down to crunch time. They're like, okay, I guess we've got to do it. But there you go. I mean, at the end of the day, it's good for people who just want to, you know, watch more free stuff. They have, you know, they have new stuff coming out all the time, and there'll be quite a lot new available by July. So,
yeah, I got some long way
merch
down, round and up posters in the mail recently. I ordered them several weeks ago. Everything from their merch store comes like super late, like not late, but just not overnight.
There's a long way to deliver.
Yeah, they had to bring it on motorcycles from South America to the US. It was funny because when it came, it was like 2 day shipping. I guess they just don't ship it for 3 weeks or so.
Yeah.
But they're cool. It's part of my decor. You know, my decor here is some really cool posters. And then something else that happened cool is with For All Mankind, you know, we've seen the season 2 teaser trailer that's like kind of a really short montage of things to come in season 2. And, you know, that's the alternative history space program show on Apple TV Plus. And season two is set to premiere on February the 19th. Just last night, I got early access to the season two trailer, the full like 2.5 minute long trailer for season two. And got to share that today as soon as it went up. And that's very cool. And I'm hoping to get, you know, early access to that. I think it's gonna be happen where you know, how they do when they do embargoed reviews of shows on Apple TV Plus. I think I'll be able to get that for All Mankind. So we'll have to do a little episode on that, you know, topic on that when it happens.
But yeah, for sure. And hopefully we'll be able to get Astronaut Reisman back at some point as well for a little chat and update. That'd
be very cool.
That'd be cool.
That'd be very cool. Yep. There's much more to come on that front though, I can say. So I'm happy with that. It's kind of funny because, you know, it's just because of our 9to5 Mac sister site Space Explored that this is like ending up in front of me. one Apple TV Plus show of all of them.
Look, Apple does everything now. It doesn't matter what site you're right for. They're going to get their tendrils in there.
Yeah, maybe Foundation will be the same treatment. Yeah, that'll be one to pay attention to. You want to take a sponsor break here for a moment?
Sure. The developers from popular iPad app Notability have a new app for you to download and try out. It's called TwoBird. That's TwoBird. It's the inbox for all your tasks. Find out more information at TwoBird.com. It brings together notes, reminders, calendars, and email into a single inbox view. It puts all of your tasks in one place, so you can simply manage more of your day at once without having to switch contacts. We all have done that thing where, you know, you go into your email and then you click on your like tasks app and you click on reminders and then, oh, you need to go and look up this thing in the web browser. And before you know it, you know, you're scrolling Twitter for 10 minutes, completely distracted. Well, TwoBird helps to reduce those distractions because everything is just available in one app. There's no need to switch between different applications just to do your daily organization. All you have to do is sign in with your Gmail account and TwoBird is like an email client on steroids. All those actions that you need to do on incoming messages, you can do them from within TwoBird. You can make notes and those notes can be shared with others so you can collaborate in real time. And that goes beyond just text. You can do checklists and tables and assign tasks from within the note. And they've also got a built-in calendar so you can make dated events and then attach notes and email references to the calendar event. And of course, it has all the kind of smart email management features you expect from modern email clients, like a snoozing equivalent, quickly unsubscribe, or tidy up your message list. And all of this comes in a super clean design with light and dark themes that looks great on Mac and iPhone. You can get the app on macOS, iPhone, iPad, and Android. TwoBird is completely free to download, so give it a try right now. Find it in the Apple App Store and the Google Play Store, and it's also coming to Microsoft Windows soon. That's TwoBird.com.
Yeah, so when I was preparing for TwoBird to advertise with us to sponsor us, I was very familiar with Notability. It's like one of the go-to apps for iPad. I mean, you can take handwritten notes. You know, you do voice recording and everything. Like, it's a really wonderful app. I was not familiar with TwoBird yet, and as I was on the call to learn more about it, I downloaded it for the Mac and you know, put it in dark mode and had my work email set up and everything and was able to check out the notes and the unsubscribe features and everything. And it's a really nice Mac app. I mean, we know nice Mac apps and we're picky. So, this is one of those. So definitely check out TwoBird, both for Mac and everywhere else that's available. So thanks for sponsoring this week, TwoBird.
Okay. Let's get started with the tumult of Mac rumors. Starting
rumors
with
about the Mac.
Rumors about the Mac, indeed. Not a different website. Mac rumors. Apple is planning the first redesign of its iMac all-in-one desktop computer since 2012. This has been rumored all around the place for what feels like 2 years at this point. We were originally expecting like a WWC announcement last year. It didn't happen. And it's been highly anticipated for, I'd say, at least 5 years because the iMac design has just got so dated, you know. But Bloomberg has a nice story today, Mark Gurman. It's going to be the biggest visual overhaul for the Mac lineup in 2021 for the iMac. So basically the other products are going to get updates, but they won't have as big a form factor changes. apparently the new iMac will slim down the black borders around the screen. So the bezels are going to get way thinner. It's going to look close in design to the Apple Pro Display XDR, which is basically just like a rectangular box, right? Like the current iMac has the curves on the side, it has the rounded corners, and then you look at an edge on and it does this like weird tapering effect. Apparently all of that is going away. It's going to look very close to a Pro Display XDR, but it probably won't have all the, you know, the weird like cheese grater holes in the back of it. It's going to be a flat back. There's going to be no chin. Thankfully, they're actually going to do a thin bezel design. I mean, it's so long in the tooth, you'd hope so at this point. Bloomberg says there's going to be two versions of it to replace the existing 21.5-inch and 27-inch models. The Bloomberg report doesn't say that the new versions will have the same screen sizes, because if you remember, there's been on and off rumors about like a 24-inch model and maybe like a 30-inch model instead of 27. And if they're going to shrink the bezels down, we've seen it on a lot of products where they just make the screens bigger to account for the bezels getting smaller rather than just making the overall body smaller. So Bloomberg doesn't actually specify the screen sizes, but you can imagine they're going to be in that ballpark because they're still going to have two models. It's not that they're going to cut it down to one screen size. And these will feature, obviously, Apple Silicon chips, the next generation versions, so not the M1, whatever's going to come afterwards. I mean, finally, right? Like, this is what we want.
Yeah.
Like, the iMac is so old. I have one behind me from 2010, which basically looks identical to the iMac you can buy on the shelf today. And so they've been saving this redesign out for a while, and they're going to be able to debut it sometime this year, not only with the external design changes, but also with the performance upgrades and all the benefits that the Apple Silicon internals will bring.
Sign me up. it's been the case that the 21.5-inch iMac has not really been the one for me. I mean, let's say that we just loved the iMac design. You know, we thought it was amazing, and we were looking for iMacs to buy. The 5K version has definitely been more appealing than the 4K version, the 21.5-inch version. Because 21.5 inches to 27 inches is a pretty big jump right there. If they do go 24 inches and 27, then it makes that entry level one more compelling in a way that like 13 is not that much different than 15 or 16. So that's interesting. And they did go to 24 on the LG 4K Ultrafine that Apple sells from 21.5 inches. So I wonder if there's a relation there. But at any rate, you know, just to make it glanceably different than the current things is all we ask for.
Yeah, and if they're going to bring it in line with the Pro Display XDR look, then it makes sense. When you can have them on the desk, you could have there's nothing to say you couldn't plug in a high-end iMac with a Pro Display XDR as well. And if you want a two-display setup, you can have basically two things that look almost identical, right? Like, back in the day, the Thunderbolt display had almost the same dimensions as the iMac of the time, so they would sit parallel on the desk, aligned mm-hmm. where the heights were. Right.
Sure.
Currently, if you get an iMac and the Pro Display XDR, they're completely different sizes and completely different, you know, orientations. So, like it doesn't have that synergy basically across the lineup. So, and it seems like this whole flat sides, squared off edges thing. You know, Apple's going all in. They did it on the 2018 iPad Pro, obviously. And then last year they did it on the iPhone 12 series. Mm-hmm. And now apparently it's coming to the iMac as well. Obviously the Pro Display XDR kind of was already on that schedule. The thing with the Pro Display XDR is that design specifically, I feel like it's a bit more industrial than when you look at like the 2018 iPad Pro, which feels a bit more human in that way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I was looking around Best Buy a few days ago, and there's these giant TVs that are, I guess they're 8K TVs.
Mm-hmm.
And they have that same boxy, you know, very thick design. They're not like the OLED screens that are super, you know, crazy thin with like a little bit of a computer part to it somewhere else in the design. They're thick the whole way through, but they're also state of the art. And so I think that's fine. And like you start from that, and then you thin it out over the years. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and there wasn't any particular reference to like the iMac Pro versus iMac differentiation in this story. It just says two new models to replace the current ones. you can maybe there won't be an iMac Pro anymore, and they'll just have like higher end configs of the 27-inch iMac, which are basically the iMac Pro equivalent anyway, right? Like, Apple Silicon is already going to do so much for these machines and performance, it doesn't seem out of the question that they probably don't need like two product lines anymore, one with crazily different thermals. They can just like do it all in the same chassis and just spec out the high-end configs to cover what the area of the market that the iMac Pro previously occupied.
Yeah. When do you think these things are coming?
The Bloomberg report just says later this year.
Later this year, so not like March.
It doesn't say March, but maybe like, I feel like these days Gurman tries not to specify times as much just because everything's so fluid.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Like, we could have another crazy pandemic that upsets things before June. Who knows? Like, you'd hope they're probably aiming for like a WWC type. I always feel like with the Macs, Apple's like, let's try and get stuff ready for WWC because it's you know, it's the crowd for it. But obviously, there's nothing binding them to that date. So it's just, well, if it happens, it happens. You know, it's like, so I'd expect around mid year. If we're waiting till like December, I'd kind of be annoyed because that's a really long time to wait because the current iMacs. And the other thing about the iMac situation, like when they did the basically non-update last year, they did like press interviews, did different podcasts and stuff. And in the interview, they had like the iMac product manager talking to Jason Snow on Upgrade. And one of the comments that she made is that the iMac is like a visual statement in people's offices. Like it exists there to look good. And as well as anything else about the machine, right? It sits on like reception tables and it's the people have it on company entrances and all that kind of thing. But the current iMac doesn't represent that because it's so old and like crummy. Like you want something really sleek. What you kind of want is like a 27-inch iPad on a stand. Like think how thin and light a 27-inch iPad could be. Like that's kind of where you want it to go. Not this current like chunky bezel, big chin.
Well, the back of it looks great. It's the front of it that you look
dated. So yeah, like I hope when this does come out that it does actually look super modern. Because if it looks too much like the Pro Display XDR, I wouldn't be as impressed with its elegance. Because I feel like the Pro Display XDR does make compromises because it has to output such high brightness levels. You know, like the 1200 nit, 1600 nit levels, that it just has to have like chunky space for fans and stuff. Whereas an iMac, like especially even the lower end consumer iMacs, don't have those restrictions, so they can still make something.
Will it have a webcam built in, or will it be a magnetic accessory that you have to attach to?
Oh, it's got to have one built in, right? Well, the quality of said webcam will remain unclear, but it's got to have one built in. Mm-hmm. Speaking of displays, there was actually a continuation of this report that Apple's working on Mac Pro updates, and as well as that, they're actually going to make an external display that isn't the Pro Display XDR. They're going to make a, quote, cheaper Apple external display is in early development. So, again, you can imagine that it will be designed to match whatever the iMac industrial design is. So you could just have an iMac 27-inch and maybe flanked by two of these new Apple external displays either side. They wouldn't aim to have the crazy high contrast ratios of the Pro Display XDR, but most people don't need that. They just need, you know, nice brightness monitors, you know, 500, 700, 800 nits that look nice. They don't have ugly logos. They're made of metal. They have, you know, they're not the ultra fines, which are like good panels, but the actual like chrome around them and casing is just basically bottom of the barrel. Just have nice displays, hopefully with integrated webcams, because that's always nice. And then maybe some speakers and stuff, because the Pro Display XDR doesn't even have speakers inside it, right? So you want like the all-in-one finish there. And then just ship those. And the Pro Display XDR costs, what, like $6,000? That's including the stand, obviously. And then another $1,000 if you want the nanotexture finish. Hopefully they could ship a nice, you know, prosumer Apple external display for, what, $1,500, $2,000? Like, they're still expensive prices for monitors, right? But that's bringing it back down to, you know, the more acceptable levels of, like, the Thunderbolt displays of old.
You could buy two for the price of one.
Yeah. I mean, I'd definitely be in the market for something like that. I still have a non-Retina 25-inch Dell monitor that I use in the absence of anything better.
I've got two LG ultrafine 21.5-inch 4K displays on a dual VESA mount, but only one does anything right now in the age of the M1 MacBook Air.
And if you had the option of a accessible Apple monitor, you'd probably bought that instead.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, yeah. These are okay, but they might as well be like PC monitors.
On the Mac Pro, we've heard about this before, the whole half-size Mac Pro featuring the ARM cores, right? Mm-hmm. This Bloomberg report says that Apple's also developing an update to the full-size Mac Pro that might still feature Intel CPUs for another generation that would just kind of like carry on alongside the new like ARM version. Mm-hmm. That's probably just going to be like a transitional model. So if by the end of this year, you know, some workstations, some big companies, video shops, or, you know, specialist industries, they need Mac Pros, but they, you know, their software is too incompatible with Apple Silicon and the ARM stuff, and it's just not running fast enough, or there's incompatibilities or whatever, that they still have something to buy that's kept up to date. I don't think it's going to be like long term, the Intel one's going to stick around. It'll just carry on for like maybe one more generation and then slowly fade away.
More great Intel Macs on the pipeline.
Is indeed. Okay, Happy Hour this week is also sponsored by Headspace. For the new year, why not start a new routine of mindfulness and meditation? Headspace is here to help. Their sessions can reduce stress, improve your sleep, and boost focus and give you a sense of well-being. The Headspace app offers easy-to-access guided meditations, and they're one of the only meditation apps that are advancing the field of mindfulness with clinically validated research. Headspace is backed by 25 published studies on its benefits, with more than 600,000 five-star reviews and 60 million downloads to date. It has sessions for every situation, and it really can help you feel better. If you're feeling overwhelmed, there's a 3-minute SOS meditation for you. Need some help falling asleep? Try out specific wind down and relaxation sessions. And if you're a parent who's got kids, you can even choose meditations that are designed for the whole family to get involved, maybe when you're getting ready to go out in the morning. I signed up on their website and they do a really nice job of guiding you into the world of meditation. It's nicely designed and super easy to get started. Like, I've never done meditation before, but when you make an account, they ask you if you're new. And if you are, it like shows you some basic starter packs that you can kind of get involved with. The intro sessions aren't too long, so you just like get in, relax, and then you can go into some of the more complicated routines later down the road. And of course, once you've got an account, you can use Headspace on iPhone, Android, and on the web. It all just syncs between it. Headspace makes it easy for you to build a life-changing meditation practice anytime, anywhere. You deserve to feel happier. Headspace is meditation made simple. Go to headspace.com/Mac. That's HEADSPACE.com/MAC Mac for a free 1-month trial with access to Headspace's full library of meditations for every situation. It's the best deal offered right now. Go to headspace.com/Mac today.
All right. Thank you, Headspace. So moving on with the rumors of this year, Ming-Chi Kuo has some MacBook Pro rumors, some things that you might buy.
Yes. This has been the long running saga, the MacBook Pro. I'm sitting here holding on to my 2016 butterfly keyboard disaster. Like, I know that the 2016 MacBook Pro gets a bad reputation, right? The laptop is fine when it's brand new, but wait a year and a half, and that's when the keyboard just falls to pieces, and now it just looks terrible in comparison to like the M1 MacBook Air, which is way faster than it and doesn't have fans. Like, what I would say as kind of like the exit interview for my 2016 is, A, the keyboard was fine when I bought it, but now it's terrible. Like, it's literally like a game of Guess Who. When you pick that laptop out, like 45 degrees, I'd say 3 or 4 of my keycaps just immediately fall straight off. Like, and you don't understand how careful now I have to like transport the laptop around to my office and back in, because I'm so worried that if I pick it up slightly wrong, one of the keys is going to flop straight out the side and I'd be lost forever.
What are you going to do with it when you're done with it?
Good question. Maybe I mean, throw it away. I don't know. I mean, like, theoretically I could pay the what, like $400-$200 or whatever and get it serviced, but I don't want to get it serviced with just, because they're not going to give me the new generation of Butterfly. They replace it with the same generations it came with. And even before I had the really bad problems, I still had like the occasional stuck key and stuff, which I could live with. It was annoying for, you know, the pro laptops to be impaired in that way. But you could get along with it. This keyboard, it's like you can't type on it anymore. Like, I use an external keyboard with it only. That's actually a lie. I typed this report from Quo on this laptop because I was in my bedroom and I didn't have my external, I didn't have my desk set up. And I tell you, it was a nightmare. Like, I'd say about every third word, it misses a key out. So I have to go back and correct it. And if you, it does double keys, it does the wrong key that you tap on. And if you're not careful, I have autocorrect turned on the Mac. So it types the wrong key and then it autocorrects a completely different word. It's like, oh my God, it's stress. It's literally a stress machine. But I'm not going to, like, what am I going to do now? Buy a 2019 Mac Pro? Of course not. This is what I want is the 16 inch that's coming out this year, which is going to be all singing, all dancing and brand new. And Quo has the answers. So in this report, reliable Apple analyst Minchi Kuo, he said there's going to be in 2021 a 14 inch and a 16 inch MacBook Pro. It's going to have, well, it's kind of going to undo a lot of the decisions they made with the 2016 and later generations, right?
Yeah, if this pans out, certainly.
Yeah, I mean, already with the 2019 16 inch, they obviously ditched the butterfly keyboard back to scissor switches. You get physical escape key and you get the T-shaped keyboard and stuff. But this one's like everything but the keyboard is now getting reverted. So supposedly it's going to have a new design, quote redesign, that will again have squared off sides. They're going to remove the curviness on the chassis.
What's the iPhone 12 iPad Pro. What's the curviness that they're removing? I'm not quite sure.
Well, like on my current laptop, if you, like, you know, when you pick it up, there's like, it goes straight on the bottom base and then it curves underneath.
Okay.
So like, it's kind of like the, I always think of the bottom of the MacBooks as like, do you remember the original iPad where it was like thick on the edges and then it would have like this beveled out bit at the back?
Sure. Yeah.
So that's kind of what the current laptops are, right? It's nowhere near as curvy as like the phones were, right? Because it's not like they curved the top edges and stuff. But I mean, this is a point of contention because Quo calls this a redesign with squared off sides. Bloomberg says that it'll only have minor design changes. But I think both those things can be true, right? Because if it mostly looks like the same MacBook Pro that we know today, but the chassis slightly more rounded off, you could, depending on who you talk to, they could say that's a redesign, a new design, because it is different versus, you know, it's only small changes. So I can understand that. The Quo doesn't specify about like what they're doing with like the screen bezels. Obviously the 2019 16 inch, the bezels got slightly smaller, but not crazily amount, not by a crazy degree. And you should have like the fatter bezel on top where the webcam is. He does say that the 13-inch high-end Mac Pro is getting replaced by a 14-inch model, which we saw happen when they changed from the 15-inch to the 16-inch, I guess. I would welcome, you know, more of a thinner bezel there, just to, like, closer to what like the iPad has or something, where you get, you know, like the nice rounded corners on the screen that follow the overall chassis. But it doesn't sound like that's going to happen. But whatever. The big stuff, number one, supposedly Apple is bringing back the MagSafe connector. Now, we've seen, obviously, Apple reintroduce the MagSafe branding for the iPhone 12 with the wireless charging on the back. Mm-hmm. But Quo is very specific here. This isn't like wireless inductive charging. Specifically, the magnetic connector is returning.
Yeah, this is, I mean, when I was reading the 9to5 Mac Slack room chat this morning, kind of in reaction to this, I thought there'd be like unanimous celebration for this. And it was more like, yeah, you know, after 4 years of not having MagSafe and we've got USB-C, there's a lot of things that we like about USB-C that we're not necessarily sure we'd want to give up for MagSafe again. You know, being able to charge on either side of the machine when you've got a Mac with USB-C on both sides. Although that's only certain models. It isn't a different model. Especially like my MacBook has two ports on one side. You can't charge on both sides. One's a headphone jack. Being able to use any cable to charge with is useful. You know, all the things that we liked about the switch from MagSafe to USB-C charging in the beginning, that proved useful over time. I know for me, MagSafe was like the pitch of it is, you know, you yank it, you catch it the wrong way and it disconnects without yanking the computer off of the table. And a point that our colleague Guy Rambo made was with the M1 MacBook Air and Pro, the battery life is so good that you can just use it on the sofa with nothing plugged in for hours and hours and just charge it when you're not using it. And that's kind of the new normal with the M1 chip and modern battery life now with that processor. But what I was thinking was, you know, if you have like my MacBook Air has two USB-C ports, if it had two USB-C ports plus MagSafe in some modern design, you know, very similar shape to it, you know, the kind of thing. And there was one port that was just always for charging and one that you could charge with, or, you know, it could be the cable that you use to plug up to your display and it powers it and connects to your hub and all those things. But you'd have more versatility there in that you've got a charge only port and you've got a, you know, two ports that can be charging ports or data ports or, you know, display ports and all those things. I think I'd be okay with that if it wasn't like we're going to take the MacBook Air with two USB-C ports and we're only going to give it one USB-C port and one MagSafe port, you know, that would be a major step backwards. So as long as it's not you're losing anything, then I'm okay with it. I would still happen to, like, from my display, I would just plug up a display and that would power it and do all the things. And I probably wouldn't use MagSafe in that instance. And what wasn't it like, it was kind of a hacky thing whenever there was a Thunderbolt display where it had MagSafe. What was the arrangement there? It had like a funny way of doing MagSafe to get power to it, the computer as well.
I can't actually remember. I do remember what you mean, but yeah. I never owned the original Thunderbolt display.
Me neither. Yeah.
But it was some like, I think because you could only do the power would connect to the display and then the thing would go to the...
It couldn't power Thunderbolt 3.
And then the thing would go to the outlet, but the USB ports on the Thunderbolt display needed data out somewhere else. It was some like weird adapter like that, right?
Yeah,
like,
you went MagSafe from the display to the computer. Or yeah, you went MagSafe from the display to the computer and then the display power to the wall. So it was like a weird way of having MagSafe involved in a display just for power alone. Which these days,
what I remember of MagSafe is the when they did the second generation one with the 2012 MacBook Pro, and they made it like really thin, and wider and thinner. And that one I found quite regularly would just pop out when you didn't want it to. Like I'd have it sat on my lap, plugged in, and then you'd like adjust how you're seated, and it would just be enough for that thin thing to go bop and it would disconnect and be like, oh great.
And I think that was just to make it thinner too, right? Like the whole machine got thinner and so MagSafe got thinner too for that reason. Yeah.
And you had to have a dongle, by the way, if you had the old MagSafe charger, you had to get a little adapter, the MagSafe 2 adapter. That was the thing that existed back in the day. Like I think it like obviously as soon as they add a MagSafe connector back, you lose the symmetry, right? So aesthetically it won't look as nice because you won't have like two identical ports on both sides of the laptop. But, you know, these are pro machines in the day and they have to probably regard some level of functionality above just raw aesthetics. Like, these are objects to be used, they're not objects to look at. So I can understand bringing the port back. But yeah, like, I hope they don't, that bringing the MagSafe connector back doesn't mean that you suddenly can't charge through the USB-C ports. Because being able to charge on the left or right side of this laptop is easy, one of its, like, redeeming features for sure, because when I'm, you know, in the house or whatever, a lot of time I'm plugging on the left, but on my desk it's all set up so the Thunderbolt dock and everything is all on the right hand side, so the fact that I can just plug in on the right is like a lifesaver. I don't know what I'd do. Well, I'd have to rearrange my entire desk setup if it could only charge on the left again, because the 2012 MacBook Pros in that general that design, the MagSafe was on like the top left, right, and then they'd have IO running down the right hand side. You do see those things on Kickstarter every now and again, which kind of like adapt the USB-C port to have like a magnet on them, and they kind of work, but they never seem like super reliable.
Well, you have one cable with the MagSafe feature, or you have the thing sticking out of your Mac all the time.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's kind of a compromise in that way.
Yeah, but maybe if Apple did it, they could integrate it. So like, I don't know if it's possible. Basically, I'm saying I don't know if it's possible for them to make like a magnetic USB-C port that could still have all the advantages of USB-C, you know, doing power data over the same port and still be like a magnetic attachment. We haven't seen other companies do that, so I assume it's just not possible. Because I'm getting the next 16-inch MacBook Pro when it comes out, but I wouldn't immediately think I'm going to start plugging in using MagSafe again, because I'm so used to my sit down at my desk and plug in one port which connects to my Thunderbolt dock, and that does everything, right? That does the display output, that does my IO, it does the mouse and keyboard are connected to that. It does the power charging, obviously. Like, why would I want to go back to a world where I have to plug in, you know, one cable just to charge it, and then the other? Because when it's on the desk, it's stable, right? There's no worry about the cable like popping out and the laptop flying across the floor. Like, the advantage of MagSafe only comes in when you're like, you know, in the, like, a kitchen table, and it's possible that the cable's going to get yanked from someone walking past the kitchen or something. Mm-hmm. But when you've like set up your desk arrangement, the cables just go down, trail out down the back where no one's ever going to touch them. So the MagSafe advantage is quite small, in my opinion.
Yeah. In 2016,
out of everything that you could say they could bring back, MagSafe wouldn't have been like on my list.
Yeah. In 2016, there was a patent that Apple had filed for something that was called a universal magnetic connector. And, you know, patents are hard to translate into actual things sometimes, especially with just the drawings alone. But it seems like they were trying to add a MagSafe quality to any port on the MacBook. And I mean, if there was a way to do that to where it was the smart part about it was on the port side and not the connector side, that you could bring any connector to it. And it would be, if you plug this into there, you know, the port, the connector is metal, and the port has some intelligence, you know, some magnetic factor to it that knows how to handle that. You know, versus, I guess, connection by being so narrow and having pins and that kind of thing. Maybe they could do it to where it looks the same as today, but you know, and that just kind of gives you the MagSafe features, with the same ports as today. What's more interesting to me is changing the ports on a future MacBook.
Yeah. And the other part of this rumor is they're going to bring I/O ports integrated back into the machine.
Right.
So right now, you on the 16-inch at least, you have two USB, two Thunderbolt 3 powered USB-C ports on the left and two USB-C ports on the right, which can do everything, but you need dongles and adapters to actually use them with stuff, right, for most cases. What Quo says, he doesn't specify which I/O is coming back. He says, but there'll be more I/O to the point where most customers won't need dongles anymore. If you think about what the old laptops offered, they had what, USB-A, HDMI, SD card slot, and then the old ones had Ethernet as well. Well, Ethernet's not coming, let's be realistic. I don't think they're going to offer USB-A ports again, like their old technology, the square ones.
My PS5 has USB-C and USB-A on the front.
Really?
Yes.
That's quite funny. Apple's not...
Well, and they do USB-A and USB-C on the Mac Mini, right? And
Mac Mini.
Yeah, on the iMac.
Yeah,
on
they
the
do.
Mac Pro.
Okay. I take your point.
Like, and that's a very popular
I don't
dongle.
Know. It just seems very backwards for them to put... It seems very backwards for them to put, like, non-reversible USB ports back on a laptop. Like, I feel like by 2021, we finally got to the point where it's like fine for them not to have USB-A ports, and they're not going to bring it back now.
Yeah.
Like,
my dock,
I could be very wrong.
Yeah, I use an OWC Thunderbolt 3 dock. It's got USB-A and USB-C, and I use all of the ports.
Yeah, but you don't need them on the laptop because you use the dock.
Well, I would use them, I guess. I mean, that's the thing is if they were there, I would use them.
You wouldn't plug them in directly, though. The convenience of having the one port connected to the dock is so much better.
Yeah, but if I'm on the road, if I'm you know, doing
true,
portable
true.
Things. So.
Okay, I'll take it from being absolute to a question mark.
Sure.
But
sure.
I personally don't see them putting USB-A back. I do think SD card slot is an obvious one they can bring back because... The dongles and adapters that you have for SD card slots are just not very good. Like, they're fine, but they're big and bulky and you've carried them around. And then maybe HDMI, they'd bring back, like, dedicated HDMI, because the reality is when people need to connect to, like, projectors in conference rooms or schools and teachers, it's much easier just to have a direct HDMI port than having to do, like, USB-C to HDMI.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I know you've been wanting SD card slot for ages, right?
I have, and I finally have a camera. My newest camera is a Canon EOS R6, and it has USB-C. So I just take the same cable that I charge with, and I plug it into the notebook, and it has two SD card slots. So to transfer files would be to remove both of those if one were to fill up and it moves to the next card. So I've actually gotten to the point where it's like, you know, I'm just plugging in a USB-C cable. Because the thing before that is like, most cameras didn't use USB-C, especially in 2016. That's 4 years ago. They used, you know, micro USB and sometimes like special adapters. And, you know, Apple's line was like, just use USB-C, and they didn't exist yet. Like there was like one high-end camera with USB-C. And this is also a high-end camera. Like it's not a cheap camera. You know, it's a few $1,000s. So, just in my specific use case, it's gotten to where I plug in just the cable. But certainly I think at large though, you know, for, it would be nice to have SD card there. Cause I also use a camcorder that doesn't have USB-C. It's got micro USB. And so that's an adapter, situation. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely, I mean, that's the one thing I wanted more than anything, I think.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's take our final sponsor break of the episode and we'll come back for some wrap-up rumors and stuff. So thanks to our friends at Smile Software for sponsoring Happy Hour. Take back your time with the power of Text Expander. Repetitive typing, little mistakes, searching for answers, they're all taking precious time away from you and your team. With Text Expander, you can take it back. Just turn the things you type into reusable snippets that can be used again and again and again. Get ahead of your productivity for the new year and 2021 by taking advantage of Text Expander. It removes the repetition out of your work so you can focus on what matters most. Save time and be consistent while you're at it. Text Expander makes it easy to give your team the right words for every situation. Get it right every time. Whether you need to keep legal happy or delight customers with effective answers, you can rest easy in the knowledge that your team has got it covered. With Text Expander, you keep accurate and current with all the changes and latest messaging for your business or brand. Share your text and images with your entire staff and keep them on track. And as an individual, you use Text Expander's powerful shortcuts and abbreviations to streamline and speed up almost everything that you type. Create a powerful snippet once, and then you just use the assigned abbreviation to let Text Expander do the rest of your job for you. And you can make these snippets with customizable fields, so you still get the templates of consistency, but with tweaking on customization for those individual use cases. It just means no more repetitive typing, no chance for human error. And of course, Text Expander works everywhere. Slack, Google Docs, Trello, email apps, web browsers, the lot. And you can get Text Expander on Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, and iPad. Unlock your productivity with Text Expander. Listeners to this show can get 20% off their first year subscription. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more and sign up. That's textexpander.com/podcast. So finally, on the 16-inch MacBook Pro rumors, Quo interestingly says that Apple's going to get rid of the Touch Bar. The Touch Bar was introduced with the 2016 models. That was their like big new feature for it. They, you know, made a big deal of showing everything you could do with it, sliding around with your finger, adjusting images, picking emoji, adjusting the volume, doing all that stuff. And then they had loads of third-party apps. You remember the original demos with like the DJ app where you'd like mix the tracks on the Touch Bar itself. I think it's fair to say that, you know, that vision of the Touch Bar never came to pass. It was just like this thing that a lot of people didn't like at all and some other people just kind of put up with. I've mixed opinions on the Touch Bar myself. Like, I use it for volume control and for brightness.
Hey.
But I don't know, like, I love being able to slide my finger on brightness and volume on the right-hand side of the control strip on the Touch Bar. But do I use anything else that the Touch Bar offers me? Not really. Like, I just touch type, so I never look down at it. Like, I press the escape key on it because I still have a virtual escape key, not a physical one. But outside of brightness and volume, like, do I really benefit? Like, and it's hard to say because I really like sliding my finger to adjust volume and brightness quickly. Like, that's really useful. But it's hard for me to name, like, one other thing about the Touch Bar that I like, really love. And so for that reason, it's hard to justify them keeping it around. Like, and plenty of people, they don't just, like, find it, you know, unuseful. They actively find it annoying and they want physical keys for every button because they want to have a classic physical function, right? What do you think, Zach? Where do you come down on the whole Touch Bar versus physical key situation?
I loved the Touch Bar when it first came out because it was new and different. And it was, you know, the way that I judged it was in comparison to function keys that I mostly didn't use. It was it was much more than that. So there's no way I could make like the, a photo picker appear in the blank function row keys. And so judging it on that, it was totally fine. There were situations where, you know, using the emoji picker was useful for ones that you use frequently. But in practice, you know, it was actually a lot of swiping to get to the ones that you're looking for. And it was more useful to have a big grid of emoji on the screen than have a linear selector of emoji that you swiped through. So those are like the few, you know, cases that are iffy. Being able to do things like take complicated keyboard shortcuts in a program like Logic or Final Cut Pro and have that be a button on your keyboard, that's like the best case scenario for the touch bar. And that's where, you know, being on only the pro machines, it made more sense. But the problem with touch bar for me is that through all the updates to the touch bar since 2016, the operating system never fundamentally changed how it treated the touch bar. At least like they built all of the intelligence for touch bar before it was released. And then it came out and then it never changed in future versions of macOS. And then there were changes that I would like to see for the touch bar as it was available, like add haptic feedback to it. That never happened. It always seemed to be a little bit inferior display wise than other screens. So, it was never perfect.
Yeah. Like, they could have done more with it. Like they brought it out there. People didn't adopt it. Then it just got left behind. And then it just kind of sat around for a few years while they decided whether they're actually going to use it or not. And then it didn't. I do think it's funny, though, that like with the M1 Max last year, they obviously didn't have the touch bar on the MacBook Air, but they did put the touch bar on the MacBook Pro, the base 13-inch one with two ports. Like, why did they bother to go with that effort to even make it support the M1 architecture if they were going to drop it the following year? Like, it's a bit strange.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't blame them for getting rid of it, but it is kind of sad. Like, I just feel like it never lived up to its potential, right? Like, they never gave it a shot to be good. It was always just, well, here's what we did in year one. The year one stuff kind of flopped, but then we never even tried to give it another go. And so it's just kind of sat around lamely and now is going to get dropped.
Yeah, I have the MacBook Air with the touch bar, so I've had it, I've not had it, I've had it again, and I think the biggest thing is like the lack of consistency in where it is. You know, if you use a desktop computer or if you use a desktop keyboard, even you're not going to have that experience. So it's just on one version of the machine. And the thing is, like, if the touch bar was made to satisfy people who wanted to use touch input on macOS, it didn't do that. Like, people just prefer direct manipulation on the screen if that was available to the touch bar.
Yeah, people still ask for touch screens.
Yeah, it didn't satisfy that appetite for touch screens. So it might as well not exist to me. And that's just like, and I was so enthusiastic for it when it was brand new because it was different and neat and it could have been something. But we've had the 4-year period of like, let's see if it gets better, if it gets good, you know, let's give it time. And it's had time and hasn't gotten any different than day one.
Yeah, like, I'm really excited for this MacBook Pro update. And I mean, at this point, you might as well call it the MacBook Quo because Quo's detailed it so well. stuff we still don't know is, we don't know the performance specifications, right? We know it's going to be at least as good as the M1 chips are, right? And we expect it to be better. But for the 14-inch and the 16-inch, they're going against computers that previously had big, beefy, dedicated graphics cards inside them. So whatever the next generation is, whether it's the M2 or the M1X, they're going to have to address more powerful graphics card, because the M1 have good graphics for integrated comparisons, but they're not going to beat the dedicated graphics that are on offer in, say, the 16-inch MacBook Pro today. So, I have faith that Apple will be able to deliver there, but obviously we have to wait and see what they can, you know, bring out with the unified memory architecture and all the other benefits the M1 provides. We also really need them to address the limitations, like the fact you can only support one external display on the M1 machines, right? Mm-hmm. Or the Mac Mini gets two because you get the one through a HDMI port and one through a USB-C port. But really, like, you know, if you go on Apple's website and look up the higher MacBook Pros, they love showing it on desk where it has two displays, one on the left, one on the right. Like, that's kind of a limitation they need to resolve. And I'm sure they will. Like, I think we've worked out somebody with like PCI lanes and stuff. I'm sure they can resolve that. It's just waiting to see it happen. And then the other question mark is like, Face ID, like, Touch ID's fine, but Face ID would be cooler. And I feel like when you've got a laptop, you just open the lid, the webcam's in like a perfect space to scan your face and let you in. These reports don't say anything about Face ID, which probably means it's not going to happen this year, which is sad, but whatever. Like, I guess you can't have everything you want all in one go. And to me personally, I can't even remember the last time I used Touch ID because the Apple Watch Unlock I found has got pretty reliable.
Nice, yeah.
So a lot of the time now, either the laptop's been locked for so long that it doesn't lock with anything but a password, or it unlocks via the Apple Watch.
The amount of times
I actually use the Touch ID unlock is quite rare.
The iPad needs the Apple Watch unlock, just like the Mac has. That'd be very useful.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Before we go, tell me really quickly about music and podcast apps for Windows, and then we'll do a quick mention of the podcast subscription rumor.
Yes. 95 Max, Felipe Esposito, has found evidence that some version of music and some version of podcast are in development to be released on the Windows Store. So these could just be thin wrappers around web clients. Like, you could just take like music.apple.com and wrap it in like the equivalent of Electron, but for Windows, and just ship that.
Right.
Or it might be like, you know, a bigger diversion for them because like, obviously, with Catalina, they split out iTunes and stripped it down and brought out music for Mac. They didn't do that on the Windows side. You still have iTunes on Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's kind of been a weird outlier. And so maybe they're going to, you know, they've decided, okay, now's the time where we're going to give the music treatment to Windows. And that's actually what's coming out. Podcasts obviously previously existed inside of iTunes, but it doesn't exist as a standalone app. They also don't have a web client for podcasts. Yeah, right? Like, you can't go to podcast.apple.com and get, like, your subscriptions and your feed and everything. You can only, like, play individual episodes. So if they're going to do a podcast app for Windows, that'd be a more meaningful effort, you'd think, assuming they're going to do more than just, like... Because like, the podcast app on the Mac is based on the iOS implementation, right? Or along those lines. Like, what's available inside of Windows and iTunes is nowhere near to that. So for them to do a dedicated podcast app for Windows, it's a big investment. So we have to see if that actually like pans out. But it does tie into the latest report from The Information that, yes, and I think Bloomberg backed this up as well, that again, Apple is intending on launching some kind of podcast subscription service within the coming months. We've heard about this, you know, for a while now. They've been hiring all sorts of people. Jack Shapiro is leading the podcast effort there. They're going to do their own original podcasts, and it sounds like from these reports that they're going to license some existing shows. So it'll kind of be like, it won't be all like Apple TV Plus, because Apple TV Plus is like all original, basically. It's going to be somewhere closer to like News Plus, but with some originals thrown in there. I think that's what it's not very clear, to be honest. Like these reports basically just say that Apple is pursuing deals with partners, but it doesn't specify like specifically what the business model is going to be. Because I mean, I would like it if they did something kind of like open access, so you could just, because you know, the podcast directory is open access, like anyone can submit URLs there and appear there pretty much. If they could just add on a system onto that where you could pay a little extra and like support the shows, like add just, you know, a membership inside of the podcast app, and you know, Apple keeps 30% of the revenue, and then I don't know, like I don't know how it's going to play out, but clearly they're doing something in subscription podcasts, and we'll definitely know more as time goes on. If they did offer a like membership program, maybe we'd be part of it. You know what I mean? Like, there's so many different. I think that what's probably going to end up though is it's just going to be like select partners only, with you know, their originals leading the way. Maybe there'll be some like TV Plus tie-ins in terms of what content's available, and then maybe some popular shows to compete with the likes of Spotify and everyone else that's doing the same kind of thing. Okay, that is the Happy Hour podcast for the week. You can follow Apollo Zach on Twitter, APO. @LLOOZAC. You can follow me. I'm @BZAMayo. See all of the stories that we talked about this week on 95mac.com. Leave a rating for the show in iTunes or in Overcast. We love to see it. Give us your feedback on Twitter, or you can email us happyhour@95mac.com. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye, everybody.